listening to WGXC Accra. What up, Hudson Catskill? 90.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra with all sorts of songs and sounds and stories for you this morning on the WGXC Morning Show, including we'll hear the Hudson Valley Congressional Report about what local representatives in Congress have been up to in the past week. We'll also hear from Pete Sikora of the New York Communities for Change about the environmental laws passed last week in Albany and by the state legislature. We'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all begins after the local news, which is next. Stay tuned.
Network, network. On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news. This is the network.
After the recent murders of many African-American grocery shoppers in Buffalo and elementary school children in Texas, the March for Our Lives group is organizing protest marches all over the country on Saturday, June 11th. There are two, at least, scheduled so far locally, one in Albany and one in Saugerties, both stepping off at 10:30 a.m. There's more information on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, and we'll add other local marches as they are added to the national map.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Oak Pizzeria Napolitana in Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Melanie Lukasiewicz reports for Capital Region Independent Media that the Greenville Town Supervisor Paul Macko is predicting the town budget cycle will be a difficult one this year. Quote, "It's my belief, and the rest of the board members and the public can echo in, that this is probably going to be the most difficult budget cycle that we have ever encountered in 40 years in the town of Greenville this fall," unquote, Macko said May 16th. Macko made his comments during a meeting of the Greenville Town Board. "The challenge will be coming up with a budget that meets the needs of the town while contending with high prices and record inflation rates that have been impacting the nation," he said. "But I think the inflation running at close to 8.5%, fuel oil and diesel and gasoline up Fuel oil for houses is up 80%. Gasoline is up 46% for the year. And those numbers don't factor into your inflation, unquote, Macko said. The higher costs across the board will also impact other components of the budget. One area of the budget that remains unknown is a potential new contract currently in negotiations with the Greenville Rescue Squad. That contract expires December 31st. Talks stalled after the organization presented the board with a proposed five-year contract. But we are very pleased with the services that the Greenville Rescue Squad provides. They do a fabulous job, unquote, Macko said. Quote, I really truly wish that we could try to come to terms with a contract, unquote. The supervisor said the town will try to come up with some kind of agreement, but he is concerned about the impact the proposal that includes a 34% increase in the rescue squad tax rate for 1 year will have on taxpayers. Other matters currently in negotiation include an agreement with the Teamsters Union and the Freehold Volunteer Fire Company, Macko said. Quote, it's going to be a busy time, unquote, he said. Read more about the story at theupstater.com.
Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics that Governor Kathy Hochul on June 6 signed new laws on the licensing of semi-automatic rifles, banning body armor, and expanding the state's red flag regulation. Hochul said, and I quote, it just keeps happening. Shots ring out, flags come down, and nothing ever changes, except here in New York, end quote. The biggest change in the new laws is that New York will now regulate semi-automatic rifles the same as semi-automatic pistols, requiring permits and for the license holder to be at least 21 years old. Another law Hochul signed requires officials at the State Division of Criminal Justice Services to study the feasibility of micro-stamping of bullets when fired from a gun. The slew of new gun laws comes after 18-year-olds in Buffalo and Texas murdered many blacks and elementary school children, respectively. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics.
Columbia Memorial Health Hospital announced on June 6 it has partnered with Radiologists Without Borders to donate medical supplies and equipment needed in parts of Ukraine. In addition, CMH providers donated $5,000 to support Radiologists Without Borders' global humanitarian mission. Founded by the hospital's former chief of radiology, Tarek Gill, MD, Radiologists Without Borders is an international organization that provides diagnostic imaging solutions and medical supplies to medically underserved populations around the world. Established in 2007, the organization has provided assistance in Honduras, Haiti, Chile, Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania, among other locations. The supplies recently given by CMH include tourniquets, IV supplies, gloves, and aortic grafts, all of which are essential to treat traumatic injuries. The supplies are now in Ivano-Frankivsk in Ukraine. Quote, we learned that in many areas of Ukraine, people are needlessly dying from wounds that could be effectively treated with basic life-saving supplies such as tourniquets and IVs, unquote, Gill said. CMH already donated more than $33,000 in medical supplies earlier in the spring in response to a request from St. Michael's Ukrainian Orthodox Church in Hudson. Read more about this story at rwborders.org.
Rick Collin reports in the Times Union that New York's Climate Action Council has received 18,000 comments about the state's draft scoping plan to combat climate change and have extended the comment period through July 1st. Since January, a 120-day public comment period with 6 public hearings on the plan. Once the plan is approved, state lawmakers will have to act on the changes. You can find a link to the state's scoping plan and another link to make a comment on the WGXC Newsroom webpage. Read the full story in the Times Union.
Amanda Burke is reporting for the Berkshire Eagle that Massachusetts residents will soon have access to a searchable online database of the complaints filed against active police officers statewide, as well as the outcomes of resulting internal investigations. The public database will contain the names of officers and the types of complaints filed against them, such as allegations of excessive force, policy and protocol infractions, rudeness, and, quote, conduct unbecoming, unquote. The release of the database has been delayed by the Peace Officer Standards and Training, or POST Commission, which was created as part of the police reform legislation following the 2020 police killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Although the post-statewide database of all Massachusetts departments is not yet active, the Eagle compiled the Pittsfield data in a searchable form to give residents an idea of the kinds of information that will become available for departments across Berkshire County and the Commonwealth. The Eagle has requested the same data from the North Adams Police Department, which covers Berkshire County's other city, and will make it available in a searchable format when it is received. Police departments throughout Massachusetts were required to submit to the Post Commission data on complaints, both substantiated and unsubstantiated, that were made against currently serving police officers. The data reveals there were about 200 complaints made against police officers now working in Pittsfield since 1994. Of those, 45 were coded as substantiated, and 53 resulted in some form of discipline, ranging from a letter of reprimand, retraining, resignation, verbal reprimand, and loss of assignment. A link to the database is available on the WGXC newsroom page. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle.
Diane Pinero Zucker reports in the Daily Freeman that the town of Ulster police are slow in responding to a state Freedom of Information Law request. They have not provided the Daily Freeman with a record of complaints, lawsuits, and investigations and their outcomes since 2019 that were requested on February 18th. Ulster Police Chief Kyle Bernard said in an email about the request made more than 3 months ago, and I quote, "We are in receipt of your request. Please allow us time to provide the records requested," end quote. Bernard also told the newspaper that his department is understaffed and unable to immediately provide the requested information. The Daily Freeman has now, and I quote, "filed an appeal of apparent denial," end quote. A previous state law that made it difficult to get police records has been repealed, but the town of Ulster is still not providing the public information to the public. By comparison, the Daily Freeman has recently run stories about similar requests for information being fulfilled by police departments in Kingston and Saugerties and by the Ulster County Sheriff's Office. And you can read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
And now here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Tuesday, partly sunny with a high near 76 degrees. There will be showers on Tuesday night with thunderstorms also possible after 2 a.m. with a temperature low of around 62 degrees. And on Wednesday, a chance of showers with thunderstorms also possible after 5 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 76 degrees. And Wednesday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Then showers are likely after 8 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 61 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
On Tuesday, June 7th, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the air at 90.7 FM. At 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show, you can hear the Hudson Valley Congressional Report about what your local representatives in Congress have been up to and also what the candidates who want to replace them have been up to. At 10 a.m., it's time for the Ginger Radio Hour with Justin Maiman live in Accra. The early Electro Mix Show is on at 11 a.m., and then Vinyl Freedom from DJ Patty Boone beams in live at noon after the local news. At 3 p.m., we've got some scary stories on the Radio Art Hour. At 4 p.m., the WGXC Afternoon Show is live from Hudson with Randall Martin and Kim Singletary. At 8 p.m., Eva Wartell has new and recent releases from around the world on her Music for the Masses show. And at 10 p.m., Dan Seward is live from somewhere in Columbia County. On the WGXC Battlefield Earth program on 90.7 FM,
get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
The WGXC Community Calendar online has all sorts of local events in it, including the performances from Rashid Zakat and Aluwa Femi at the Avalon Lounge on Sunday, June 26. WGXC will have a live webcast of the performances at WGXC.org. Click on the Listen button to tune in. Waveform artists Rashid Zakat and Aluwa Femi perform a virtual dance party they're calling Revival, sonic transmissions from a black spiritual and ecstatic experience. You can tune in their radio broadcast on 90.7 FM the day before, Saturday, June 25th at 4 p.m. on WGXC, or turn out in person to hear Rashid Zakat and Aluwa Femi Sunday, June 26th at 8 p.m. at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. Find out more on the WGXC Community Calendar online at WGXC.org.
Field recordings, found sound, soundscapes, ambience.
Bells, bugs,
whispers, and plinks.
Hosted by
Stephen Bradley
and Edward Rahelski.
Every fifth Tuesday of the month from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m.
Bells, bugs, whispers, and plinks.
On WGXC 90.7 FM. WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, June 7th. Early morning temperatures range from 56 degrees in Bushnellville to 61 degrees in Stockport. Soil temperature is 63 degrees. Today we have a break in the wonderful spring run that we've had. Winds get gusty after 1 p.m., a high temperature of 79 happens at 3, and then a little after that, chances for rain enter the area. Overnight, the rain becomes more steady and we see a low of 65. Dew points creeping up into the 60s will make it feel pretty muggy. Wednesday, the rain subsides by 11 a.m. A bang or two of thunder may be heard. A lofty high of 78 lingers for most of the afternoon. Overnight, we see a low of 61. And the rain returns. It keeps going through most of Thursday with a high of 76 expected. Friday looks dry with a high of 77, and so far the weekend is looking pretty wet. Pollen levels for today will be medium high. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 3:13 a.m., high tide at 8:53 a.m., low tide again at 4:15 p.m., and high tide once again at 10:01 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 74 degrees. Sunset today will be at 8:14 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:16 a.m. Looking way up, we see a relatively quiet planetary neighborhood. Sunspot activity seems to be in line with more aggressive predictions, so I hope all the satellites being launched now are ready for the intense peak around 2025. Solar wind speed is currently 316 kilometers per second at 8.9 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 MHz till dark, then fair below 15 MHz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 45. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Curtin family of Tivoli, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Name, Patty Boom. Host of Vinyl Freedom. Where? WGXC. When? every first and third Tuesday from 12:10 to 2 p.m. What? Streaming online at WGXC.org. What? Tune in for a genre shakedown, all kinds of choice cuts of wax for you and yours to listen to. Dig it.
Wake up! Wake up, wake up, wake up! Up you wake, up you wake, up you wake, up you wake! This is Mr. Senior Love Daddy, your voice of choice, the world's only 12-hour strong man on the air, here on We Love Radio.
Mm-hmm.
from the 2021 album Dissension, Out of Our Constrictions. That was Joshua Abrams and the Natural Information Society with guest Evan Parker and the first part of that long-form record.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
We are going to tell the story of a conspiracy to overturn the 2020 presidential election and block the transfer of power.
In a conversation with the Washington Post Monday, Representative Jamie Raskin said the January 6th insurrection was a far-reaching conspiracy. The Maryland Democrat is one of nine lawmakers serving on the committee investigating the attack. The committee will hold a primetime hearing Thursday when they will release part of their findings. Raskin says the group will continue unpacking the investigation's results in future televised hearings.
So this is an extraordinary and unprecedented event in our history. I mean, you really have to go back to the Civil War to understand anything like it.
House Democratic leaders are poised to vote on an eight-bill gun control package dubbed the Protecting Our Kids Act. Among other things, the measures would raise the legal age for purchasing assault rifles, set new policies for storing guns in homes with children, and ban high-capacity magazines. Most of the reforms are likely to fail in the evenly split Senate. President Joe Biden is suspending tariffs on solar panels from Southeast Asia in an effort to spur adoption of the clean energy alternative. The New York Times reports the two-year hold is drawing the ire of some domestic manufacturers and labor unions, who worry lifting the tariffs could flood the market with cheap products. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says the president will invoke the Defense Production Act to stabilize domestic production.
Altogether, these historic actions will cut costs for American families, strengthen our power grid, and tackle the climate crisis.
The Summit of the Americas kicked off Monday in Los Angeles. The event includes leaders from most of the countries in the Western Hemisphere, and it's the first time the summit has been held in America since the inaugural event in 1994. There are a few notable absences this week, including Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador. The Mexican leader is protesting the United States' refusal to extend invitations to Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua, all of which have frosty relationships with America. State Department spokesperson Ned Price said Mexico's foreign secretary will attend the summit.
We also note that non-governmental representatives will be in attendance from Cuba, from Venezuela, and from Nicaragua.
And British Prime Minister Boris Johnson narrowly survived a vote of no confidence from his own party yesterday. Tory lawmakers voted 211 to 148 to keep Johnson in power, falling short of the simple majority needed to oust the PM. While Johnson may have survived this threat to his leadership, he's not out of the woods. According to the New York Times, several prime ministers who've survived past votes of no confidence, including Margaret Thatcher and Johnson's predecessor Theresa May, were later brought down by internal party strife. I'm Jonah Chester for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our eight trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
I'm Tom Rowe at Wave Farm with the Daily Radio News. Paul McLean reports for Radio World that broadcasters who use public airwaves to make their own money face 13% increases in fees in fiscal 2022 from the Federal Communications Commission. For-profit radio stations pay small fees to the FCC to pay for regulating the industry that makes millions of dollars selling advertising on the public's airwaves. A station that can reach 6 million listeners, for instance, will have to pay less than $24,000 in fees to keep minting millions from the public's airwaves. A small Class A station that reaches fewer than 25,000 listeners has to pay $1,105. Quote, unfortunately, the commission continues to unlawfully require broadcasters to subsidize the commission's broadband activities, unquote, the National Association of Broadcasters said in a statement that stretches credulity. Quote, for these local stations that are still recovering from the pandemic and face unique economic challenges in today's media landscape, such an unjustified increase is devastating and risks undermining the unique locally focused service that our communities rely upon. NAB stands ready and willing to work with the commission to ensure a fair and lawful payment regime, unquote. Anyone with an opinion on FCC fees that, quote, may promote or inhibit advances in diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility, as well as the scope of the commission's relevant legal authority, unquote, can file comments in the FCC's online system. There's a link on the WGXC and Wave Farm newsrooms. In the preceding field, referred to MD docket number 22-2023. Comments are due by July 5th. Find out more at wavefarm.org in the newsroom. Here's Dymaxion with some radio art. It starts with Chase Scene with Transistor Radio and leads into The Haunted Radio.
We'll be right back.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined today by Pete Sikora, who is the Climate and Inequality Campaign Director for New York's Community for Change. We've talked to Pete several times before about how things going on with climate at the state legislature are not going on, particularly after this year's state budget. And we just concluded another state legislative session. We'll talk a little bit about that. But since we're coming up, I believe, about the third anniversary of passing the big climate law, CLCPA, how has New York actually succeeded in meeting the goals? I mean, for instance, are we seeing a significant reduction in carbon emissions in New York State?
Well, thanks for having me on again, Mark. I appreciate it. And, you know, that's a really key question here. What is actually happening? The state passed its big climate laws, its big climate law in 2019 that sets targets into place and says the state has to meet them. But the state is actually failing. It's not putting into place the policies and the budget items to hit those targets. And climate pollution is not dropping at the rate that's needed to hit those targets. So that means that there's more air pollution, more asthma, more death, more suffering, and an accelerated climate crisis in the future, and the missed opportunity of the jobs that could be created and the investments made to move towards a cleaner economy. So we're failing right now as a state under Governor Cuomo, and now the same sort of policies under Governor Hochul.
Now, this could probably be a couple hours, but, you know, what are some of the key, you know, reasons that we're failing? And, you know, just last week or so, you know, Governor announced, hey, we're funding all these renewable energy projects. Are we actually expanding the amount of renewable energy in the state?
Slowly, too slowly. So the state is at about 5 or 6% of the electric grid running on wind or solar. That is way too small, and it's going up way too slowly. And then there are the bigger sources of pollution are buildings and cars. In terms of cars, there's more and more SUVs out there on the road. So pollution is probably not dropping much from the transportation sector. So overall, the state is maybe at best slightly reducing its climate pollution when it needs to be plunging.
Well, the state is still in the process of developing what they call a scoping plan to implement the CLCPA law. And one of the things I had said when I read the plan, which, you know, not surprisingly, I find too weak, was the one place I thought they were somewhat strong enough was on the building stuff. And you had been involved in a campaign to get New York City to ban the use of, you know, gas in buildings moving forward. That was a big issue in the state level, almost got into the initial state budget. How did that end up, and what were some of the other key wins or losses with this, with the legislative session?
You know, there is no strong enough when it comes to climate action. We are so far behind as a world where we need to be right now that really radical change pays for itself by avoided suffering and deaths in the future, reduced air pollution, reduced sea level rise, reduced heat waves, all of those things. So there's no strong enough. There's only things that the state is more or less behind on. So the proposals that the state is making through this draft plan, which is available for comment now under the climate law, are insufficient, including on buildings. We did win at the New York City level a transformative new requirement that ends gas in all new construction. So that's very valuable. That is a basic, practical, and economic step that should be enacted. And unfortunately, once again, the state legislature killed legislation like that by deferring to the oil and gas companies and not passing a law that would have implemented what New York City did at the city level statewide.
You know, one of the things I was actually a little bit surprised about was that the proposal, they call it a public power proposal, had a number of good provisions. A lot of it was trying to expand what the New York Power Authority was doing in terms of building renewables, but it actually passed the Senate and, you know, it was a big push in the assembly as well. I mean, how did that bill seem to get some legs, but why did it also fall short?
You know, it is the truth that incumbent industries and corporate power is very, very strong in Albany. Campaign donations, lobbyist networks, lucrative jobs, advertising, TV, media influence, all of those things matter a lot. You have to overcome it with powerful grassroots campaigns. That's really the only option for normal people like you and me. We have to call our elected officials. We have to go to rallies, things like that. And in fact, in a well-done campaign that mobilizes enough power, you overcome the opposition of those deep-pocketed special interests. And so history has showed us over and over and over again that that is possible. We just did that at the New York City level with the bill I was talking about. But at the state level, we fell short in climate action this year. We did not mobilize enough folks on enough hard-hitting campaigns to break through in the depth and in the statewide way that's necessary to overcome those powerful incumbent industries. One bright spot is that the crypto miners did take a defeat. They have been turning on new fracked gas power plants or restarting old ones to power crypto mining. And the explosive growth of that sort of pollution is itself an enormous growing pollution problem. And so the legislature did pass a two-year moratorium on new crypto mining in certain forms that is reliant on fossil fuels.
So where does the climate movement go from here? I know you have continued to push the idea that people do need to invest more in building a community base and grassroots organizing. What's the next step?
Well, you know, what we have to win is the requirements, the enforceable requirements on various types of pollution sources, from buildings to cars to power plants and industrial sources, all of those things, requirements that make sense and that slash fossil fuel use and pollution. And second, we need the kind of multi-billion dollar yearly money to subsidize that transition in a way that maximizes good union jobs and makes sure that nobody who can't easily afford it has to pay anything more. That is all possible with good public policy. That is a vision of a Green New Deal. And so it is all achievable. But what's necessary is a large mobilization of groups and people across the state to press their elected officials to get those policies done. And so we're going to continue doing what we know works, which is organizing people for change. You don't win every single campaign, but you win big stuff in many cases. Crypto mining is a good example. The groups and activists that pushed, they broke through.
We have 90 seconds left. I'm going to ask you a two-pronged question, whichever part you can answer in 90 seconds. One is, you talked about money, no real big new money for, you know, climate in the budget, yet at the last moment, Hochul and apparently Senator Schumer pushed through a $10 billion subsidy package for what they call green chip manufacturers. And then second, the challenge of labor, who is mixed. You know, certain labor is really good and been helpful in some climate legislation. Others, because of concern about, you know, jobs, building out fossil fuel, have actually impeded. So how do we raise $10 billion, $20 billion a year? And how do we get labor to make climate more of a central commitment?
Well, Willie Sutton has robbed banks because he said that's where the money is. And so in New York, the money is with the wealthy people. The top 1% in New York take 40% of the income generated in the state. It's outrageous. And so changing the tax system to tax the rich a little bit more to fund a Green New Deal is a way to raise $10 billion a year. Just a 5% tax increase on marginal income over $600,000 a year annually. Just that 5% on that income would raise about $10 billion a year. That's enough to begin a Green New Deal. So that's the easiest way to do it, to take that first one.
People want to find out more about New York Communities of Change?
Oh, you can go to the website, nycommunities.org, or and sign up for email lists there and check stuff out.
We've been talking with Pete Secor, Climate and Inequality Campaign Director, New York Communities for Change. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Interesting, boring, really wonderful things.
It'd be about
chocolate pigs.
She's obsessed with pigs.
Chocolate pigs.
All the way down. I turned it down.
But only dogs can hear.
I turned it down.
Did you hear that?
No.
Here is this week's Hudson Valley Congressional Report from WGXC from Philip Grant and myself, Tom Rowe, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives of the Hudson Valley in Congress and the candidates who want to replace them. Current Democrat Representatives Paul Tonko and Sean Maloney vote with the positions of President Joe Biden 100% of the time, according to the 538.com website. Republican Elise Stefanik voted with Biden's positions 18% of the time.
Wendy Liberatore is reporting for the Times Union. The gun industry has a spokesman with exceptional access to U.S. Representative Elise Stefanik, the number three Republican in the House, her husband, Matthew Manda. Manda is the manager of public affairs for the National Shooting Sports Foundation based in Newton, Connecticut. The trade group's mission is, and I quote, to promote, protect, and preserve hunting and shooting sports, end quote, and was one of the plaintiffs in a federal lawsuit attempting to block a New York law that increases potential liability for gun manufacturers. The suit was dismissed by a judge in Albany earlier this week, but an appeal is likely. Manda frequently writes for the foundation's website and other outlets about the group's events and policy positions. He wrote in April, and I quote, "Law-abiding Americans choose over and over again to take their personal safety into their own hands and purchase a firearm. Congress needs to ensure the industry is free from woke corporate discrimination," end quote. Manda's article did not mention that Stefanik is his wife, and he did not respond to a Times Union request for comment. A foundation spokesperson refused to say when Manda started working for the group, calling it, and I quote, "personal information," end quote. When the Times Union called Stefanik advisor and campaign spokesperson Alex DeGrassi to ask if Manda's work influences Stefanik's position on gun rights, DeGrassi called the reporter, and I quote, "a very sick person," end quote. He then sent an email calling the Times Union, and I quote, "sexist," end quote. Stefanik was a strong ally of the gun industry before her husband went to work for the NSSF, and she has an A-plus rating from the National Rifle Association. Stefanik and Manda met in 2012 and were married in 2017. At the time, Manda was the marketing and communications director for the Virginia-based Media Group of America, which runs the conservative news website, The Independent Journal Review. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Andrew Waite reports for the Daily Gazette that Republican Representative Elise Stefanik made a rare appearance at a press conference about milk in Albany May 31st. It was the first time Stefanik faced reporters since 19 children and two adults were murdered at an elementary school in Texas. Stefanik said, and I quote, "I do not support gun control, but there is work that we need to do, and that is increasing mental health funding. We need to increase school resource officers and make sure that we're working with our county sheriffs to protect our schools that are most vulnerable," end quote. Matt Castelli, who is one of the two Democrats seeking the House's North Country seat, pointed out Stefanik was not addressing her constituents. which will not include all Rensselaer County residents because of redistricting. Castelli said, and I quote, she's not in her district. She's in Albany talking about something that is not related to the job of representing the 21st Congressional District. There should be no more compelling issue facing our country right now than addressing the insecurity that our parents and our kids and our teachers are facing with this threat of gun violence in our schools. End quote. Stefanik did say she supported the Fix NICS Act, which strengthened the federal background check system, the National Instant Criminal Background Check System. But Castelli pointed out that Stefanik voted against reauthorizing the Violence Against Women Act. Castelli said, and I quote, I would just like to highlight that she has been in Congress for nearly 8 years and hasn't been able to solve this problem. It's not surprising to hear Congresswoman Stefanik's remarks. She's got a pattern of behavior where every one of her actions is about service to herself. In this instance, it's about putting the needs of her special interest donors and her gun-advocating husband above the lives of our kids and the safety of our communities, end quote. Last week, the Times Union reported that Stefanik's husband, Matthew Manda, manages the public affairs for the National Shooting Sports Foundation based in Newton, Connecticut. Read more about this story in the Daily Gazette. Paul Kirby compares in the Daily Freeman the position on guns of the two candidates for special election in August to pick a congressperson for New York's current 19th congressional district. Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan, a Democrat, wants to bring back the ban on assault rifles and institute universal background checks on gun purchases. Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro, a Republican, did not list any specific legislation he would back to address the problem. Ryan said, and I quote, we must also institute universal background checks, ban bump stocks and high-capacity magazines, prevent straw purchases, close gun show loopholes, and institute red flag laws and no-buy lists for domestic abusers and suspected terrorists. End quote. He added, and I quote, Americans universally support these measures, and they deserve representatives with the backbone to take on the gun lobby and deliver actual results. End quote. Molinaro did not use the word gun in his response to the murder of 19 children and 2 adults at the elementary school in Texas. He said, and I quote, it is imperative we attack the root of the problem here, reducing isolation and fighting hatred by building a community of inclusion. It's what we've done in Dutchess County for a decade, end quote. The Just the Facts website reports that Molinaro in 2018 had a 92% rating from the National Rifle Association. In 2018, Molinaro had a 100% rating from the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association. And New Yorkers Against Gun Violence gave Molinaro an F rating in 2008. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Patricia R. Doxey reports in the Daily Freeman that Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan allowed so-called, and I quote, school resource officers, end quote, in the Roundout and Ante Aura school districts and at Ulster County BOCES last week after the murder of 19 children and 2 adults at a Texas school. The Ulster County legislature voted 19-4 for the security guards at the schools at its May 17th meeting before the Texas shooting. After the shooting, Ryan returned the resolutions unsigned. Doxey wrote, and I quote, a move that is generally used to allow a resolution to go into effect while signaling disapproval of the measure, end quote. Ryan put out his statement on the issue May 27th. He said, and I quote, as a parent, I feel very strongly that we need to do everything that we can to keep our kids safe in school. I also feel strongly that decisions about what happens in schools should be made by parents, teachers, and school boards. That is why I have consistently returned these resolutions unsigned, empowering our school districts to make these decisions, end quote. BOCES will pay the county $53,241.58 for a part-time security guard from July 1st through June 30th, 2023. The Onteora and Roundout School Districts will each pay the county $111,054.66 for security guards in each of those districts between September 1st, 2022 and June 30th, 2023. The no votes against the security guard in schools were from Legislature Chair Tracy Bartell and non-enrolled voter from Gardner, who aligns with Democrats, and Democrats Philip Erner, Abe Uccitelli, and Eve Walter. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
This is Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Report, urging you to move away from fossil fuels if you can and towards renewable energy, because, geez, fossil fuels are very expensive. It's $4.69 for a gallon of gas at the Mobil in Palenville. That's the cheapest local rate, according to Gas Buddy. And all those gas fumes head up into the atmosphere for you to breathe in, and it's not good for you. The local air quality forecast has the air quality at 37 on Tuesday, up in a bad way from a few days before. National Weather Service in Albany predicts a sunny Tuesday, good for local solar panels, with a high near 76 and a south wind spinning local windmills 6 to 14 miles per hour. Tuesday night, there's a 90% chance of showers, and thunderstorms are also possible, with a low around 60 and a south wind 8 to 11 miles per hour with gusts as high as 25 miles per hour. Wednesday, the rain continues. There's a 60% chance of showers or possibly thunderstorms in midday. Partly sunny, it becomes later in the day, is the forecast, with a high of 76 and a light west wind. Wednesday night, the low should be around 59, and there's still a 70% chance of rain. Thursday, there's a 60% chance of showers and possibly a thunderstorm in the morning. Then it turns partly sunny with a high of 70 and a low around 52. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered community radio for open ears. We'll be right back.